A well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Welcome to another edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. My name is Cam Edwards. Glad you're with me on the program today. I got an invite yesterday to head up to Washington, D.C., and be there as the DOJ and the ATF make a major announcement. 1 o'clock Eastern, I believe, is when that's supposed to take place. Announcing some big changes and big reforms to the ATF's rules. This is something that has been underway, you know, for months. Really wish that I could have been there in person, but unfortunately, my colleague Tom Knighton is under the weather, and so I'm flying solo right now on the website, and we would have had zero content at Bearing Arms had I decided to spirit off to D.C. 3 hours each way from where I live in Central Virginia. So instead, I'll be covering it long distance via the DOJ's live stream. We will have complete coverage, though, at Bearing Arms this afternoon about all of the details of the announcement from DOJ and the ATF. And hopefully before long, we'll be able to have Acting Attorney General Todd Blanche and or Robert Sakata, the Acting ATF Director, and the Deputy ATF Director on the program. Robert Sakata, by the way, his confirmation as permanent head of the ATF is slated. It is on the schedule for the Senate today. So it is possible by the time that that announcement takes place this afternoon that Robert Sakata has been named the permanent head of the ATF. All right. On today's program, we're going to be talking about the anti-gun bias that we have seen continue to see in the wake of the assassination attempt of the White House Correspondents' Dinner. I know we talked about this with Casas Moros yesterday. The vague calls for gun control coming from gun control groups and talking heads who, on the left, who again don't want to talk about the ideology of the suspect. They don't want to talk about his political views because that is inconvenient for them, quite frankly, right? So instead, they want to make it about guns. The Los Angeles Times has taken that to an absurd extreme with a story today. Cole Thomas Allen purchased weapons in L.A.'s South Bay, a hot spot for gun sales. Dun, dun, dun. Now, keep in mind, this guy was not a prohibited person. There was no reason to deny him a purchase when he purchased a pump action shotgun, when he purchased a 38 caliber 1911. Passed a background check. Both of those were retail purchases, months apart, by the way. So what's the issue here? Again, what gun control law would have prevented this guy from purchasing firearms? The LA Times doesn't even really get into that. Instead, they just profile what they call a relatively gun-friendly area within a more broadly pro-gun control county and region, Southwest LA County, they say in the town of Torrance in particular. A well-established reputation as a relatively gun-friendly area. Torrance, home to 18 firearm dealers as of November 2023, as the Times has reported. It is approximately one dealer for every 8,150 residents of the South Bay City, which has a population of around 147,000 people. Meanwhile, across the entirety of LA County, there are about 350 licensed gun dealers as of 2023, of which only 38 were in the city of Los Angeles, home to nearly 4 million people, or one for every 100,000 or so residents. Now, keep in mind that what the LA Times is talking about are FFL licenses, right? There are not 350 gun stores in Los Angeles County. There are not 18 gun stores in Torrance. There are 18 FFLs. Some folks may have, you know, home-based businesses. Some folks may have that FFL license, you know, for, you know, occasional sales. But there are not 18 brick-and-mortar locations, right? Nor are there 350 brick-and-mortar gun stores in the entirety of LA County. The Times goes on to say that at the local level, laws and practices regulating gun dealers can vary wildly from city to city. Burbank approved a temporary moratorium on new gun dealers in 2022 after concerns emerged about the concentration of shops there following that year's school shooting in Uvalde, Texas. Also, the Bruin decision had a major impact on Burbank and the push to put a moratorium on new gun stores, right? Because again, oh my gosh, now that people can get a concealed carry license, why more people might want to exercise their Second Amendment rights? We can't have that. So let's put a stop to any new gun shops opening up. The LA Times writes that in 2024, the Burbank City Council instituted buffer zones between gun stores in certain locations, including schools and churches, right? So you got to be 1,000 feet away from a school or a church. Some cities have included residences in these zoning laws. Redwood City, California, has also instituted very strict zoning laws. Alameda County actually got sued over what was essentially a moratorium on new gun stores opening up. And the Ninth Circuit, unfortunately, concluded that, okay, yeah, there might exist a right to keep and bear, but there's no right to sell a firearm. And so counties can essentially put in place whatever zoning laws they want to curtail the establishment of gun stores. The Times notes that even Torrance, this relatively pro-gun section of a more broadly gun-controlled city, has taken steps to rein in gun dealers. In 2022, as the Times reported, Jack Brandhorst, owner of a gun store called Red Rifle Limited, attempted to obtain a city permit that would allow him to move his store to downtown Torrance from nearby Carson. The Planning Commission denied the permit after a heated hearing that brought out dozens of pro and anti-gun control activists. Brandhorst appealed, and the city council voted 6-1 to uphold the denial. Since then, I believe that Torrance has passed ordinances that basically forbid gun stores, along with check casting shops, drive-through restaurants, to open up in the downtown area. So not a complete prohibition on gun stores in Torrance, but you can't open your doors here, right? It's a disfavored business. So no, you can't go into the quaint downtown area. We got to shove you off to the industrial zones or, aging strip malls, things of that nature. Again, what does this have to do with a suspect accused of trying to assassinate President Trump and other officials? Nothing, right? Nothing. They try, I guess, to make the case that there's something terrible happening in this area. They say between 2017 and 2021, Torrance dealers sold the third most crime guns later recovered in Los Angeles of any municipality in the nation. That's confusing to me, but okay. Of all of the crime guns, quote unquote, that were recovered in Los Angeles between 2017 and 2021, Torrance was the city or municipality that had the third most, where these guns were originally sold. Which, frankly, doesn't surprise me, right? If that is the part of Los Angeles County that has the most gun stores, or at least most FFLs per capita, then one would expect that a fair number of firearms originally sold in that area that are later recovered and traced, or at least recovered and designated as crime guns, we'll get into that in a second, would come from the local area, right? And again, this is Torrance is number three on the list. The LA Times says that Torrance was ranked behind only much larger Las Vegas, Nevada, and Phoenix, Arizona, according to a 2023 report by the ATF. Also in that same time period, the Times reports over 700 of the crime guns recovered in LA had been purchased at Torrance gun dealers. So in 4 years, right, 700 guns that were recovered and traced in Los Angeles have been purchased at Torrance gun dealers. Now, a note about the ATF trace data. What the ATF calls a crime gun is not necessarily a gun that has been used in the commission of a crime. And not every gun that's used in the commission of a crime ends up being traced by the ATF. The most common categories for an ATF trace, things like found firearm, possession of a firearm. And just because a gun is traced does not mean that the FFL, who originally sold that firearm at retail, did anything wrong. So if a gun is stolen from a lawful owner, and it is traced, again, that trace is going to show that it was originally sold at, you know, Cam's Gun Shop in Torrance. That doesn't mean that Cam did anything wrong. It was the thief who stole the firearm who did something wrong. Now, this would also encompass things like straw purchases. This would also encompass individuals who lawfully purchase a firearm and go on to allegedly commit crimes, as the suspect in the White House Correspondents' Dinner shooting is alleged to have done, right? But again, it doesn't mean that the FFLs themselves are doing anything bad. And yet, that again, is clearly the implication here from the LA Times story. Although we know that in the case of the suspect in Washington, D.C., Mr. Allen, there was no reason to stop him from purchasing a shotgun or a commonly owned handgun. He passed a background check. He waited the prerequisite 10 days, as Casas Morris said, before he even went to the gun store and filled out his Form 4473. He had to obtain a California firearm safety certificate, had to take a test, answer 30 questions, right? 70% pass rate, Casas said. So he jumped through all of the hoops and hurdles that California puts before potential gun buyers. He was not prohibited by law from possessing a firearm, either under state or federal law. So what's the point of this story? Unless it is to make the gun shops in Torrance look bad. And I think that very much was one of the reasons behind this story. The Times reporter, Connor Sheets, reached out to both of these stores that originally sold Allen his firearms, a Turner's Outdoor location in Torrance and a store called Cap Tactical Firearms in Lawndale, California. Now, again, neither one of these stores has been accused of doing anything wrong. There would have been no reason to deny Mr. Allen a purchase. So why reach out to these stores for comment? Unless, again, it is to insinuate that these stores did something wrong. As you might imagine, neither store really wanted to offer comment. Bill Ortiz, the senior vice president at Turner Outdoorsman, said, we exercise a longstanding policy where we discuss any potential law enforcement-related information, if and when that ever occurs, directly with law enforcement authorities only. LA Times writes that Cap Tactical was closed on Sunday and Monday, and a call requesting comment was not returned by Monday afternoon. Okay. So what? Again, so what? The and what's really weird about this story is I suspect that Connor Sheets knew this was a nothing burger, because the story that, again, is headlined, Cole Thomas Allen purchased weapons in LA South Bay, a hotspot for gun sales. I mean, okay, so what more can you say about that? The last three paragraphs of this story, all of a sudden, we're not talking about gun stores at all. Now we're talking about the suspect in this case. And not even, like, really his gun ownership, right? The story veers off into... in conversations with the Times, Allen's neighbors and acquaintances in Torrance described him as quiet, smart, and unassuming. People who knew some of his tutoring students say they described him as intelligent and skilled at mathematics and science. It then goes into the manifesto that Allen penned. References, Christian behavior. I don't know, again, why the Times decided to throw that in. And then the very last paragraph of Caltech, those who knew Allen have said he was involved in the Caltech Christian Fellowship. A 2016 posting on the fellowship's website appeared to identify him as a large group coordinator. Again, nothing to do with the rest of the story. So I think that's just a matter of padding it out, quite frankly, hoping to reach the prerequisite word count, because there is no there in the story that Connor Sheets wrote and may have been assigned to write, by the way. I don't know how the LA Times newsroom works. I don't know if this was an enterprise story by Mr. Sheets, if an editor said, Connor, we want you to write a story about the gun stores where this guy got his guns. And Mr. Sheets is like, try to do what I can here. I don't know. But it's a nonsense story. Yes. Is there a part of LA County where there are more gun stores than other areas? Yes. Do the laws fundamentally differ in that area? Are they more lax than they are in other parts of LA County or the state of California? No. Was the individual who is a suspect in this, the suspect in this attack, a prohibited person? Is he accused of committing a straw purchase or buying guns under the table? No, he's not. Is there any credible accusation that any of the gun stores in Torrance are willfully turning a blind eye to criminals when they come in and try to buy guns? No, there's not. Again, what was the point of this story other than to just generally make it seem like these stores are doing something wrong? And again, at the very tail end of this story, we get back to the suspect himself, right? Because there's really nothing else to talk about. But even then, the focus is on, well, you know, he called himself a Christian, and there were a lot of, you know, references to Christianity in his manifesto. Nothing about the guy's politics, right? Nothing about his social media posts. Nothing about his political ideology. No. They tie it into Christianity. How about that? All right. I'm ready for this news cycle to move on, quite honestly, because it is infuriating to see the unwillingness of the media, again, pundits on the left, politicians on the left, just the unwillingness and inability to acknowledge a fundamental reality. This guy had a very left-leaning ideology. He was inspired by his hatred of Donald Trump. You can argue again, you know, whether being steeped in the blue sky mentality, you know, consuming left-leaning media, whether that fueled his rage. We don't even have to have that debate as far as I'm concerned. Just acknowledge where he was coming from. And they can't even do that. Instead, they more gun control. What type of gun control? More. Yeah, but I mean, what specifically? Specifically more. That's all they got. That's all they got. Well, we have more. Not more gun control, but more stories. We've got our armed citizen story. We've got our good deed of the day. We've got a recidivist report. And let's get to that with a story out of Louisiana. Former Louisiana State University, current Southern University running back Trey Holly avoids jail time with a no contest plea to gun charges. Yeah. How many times have we seen a variation of this headline? College professional athlete commits crime, avoids jail. I mean, I grew up in Oklahoma City in the 1980s. I went to school in Norman, Oklahoma, home of the University of Oklahoma. And I went to OU at the same time that Brian Bosworth was there. Barry Switzer was the head coach. The dorm where the football players stayed was essentially a lawless area, right? A lot of drugs, a lot of guns. Not a lot of punishment for that. I don't even think there were all that many official arrests in that era. But again, it is all too common. When an athlete or a celebrity runs into trouble with the law, they don't face the same consequences that someone who would run a 6-second 40 would. It's odd how that works, isn't it? So in the case of Trey Holly, Holly was accused originally of a number of crimes. He was arrested in February of 2024 in connection with a shooting at an apartment complex in Union Parish. Two people were injured in that shooting. Holly was a running back for LSU at the time. He was charged with one count of attempted second-degree murder, one count of aggravated criminal damage to property, and one count of illegal use of a weapon. Instead of being convicted of those crimes, Holly was offered a plea deal. Plead no contest to a charge of illegal use of a weapon. You will get probation, and you may even be able to have this wiped away. Why would you not accept that deal, right? And his defense attorney basically said as much. Said, after completion of probation, we would be able to file under a provision of Louisiana law a motion to set aside the nulla contendere plea or the conviction and have verdicts of not guilty entered. Verdicts of not guilty entered. So again, charges wiped away. If Holly had been convicted of the original charges, he would have been looking at least 10 years in prison. Instead, he gets 1 year of active supervision, probation. I mean, that is a no-brainer, right? His attorney said, well, I mean, we were willing to go to trial. He said, I very much wanted to try the case just from my personal perspective because I thought I had a very decent chance of getting an acquittal. He said, but on the other hand, if my client had been convicted as charged, he would have faced the penitentiary sentence of not less than 10 and no more than 20 years. And it was my feeling that being able to get a one-year probation with no jail time and just a fine was a no-brainer to me. He said, I clearly recommend it, particularly since we didn't plead guilty, we plead no contest. I mean, if I was Holly's attorney, I would have said the same thing. You'd be an idiot not to take this deal. The question is, why was it offered to him? And the Advocate newspaper apparently had a pretty lengthy conversation with Holly's defense attorney. I don't see any quote at all from a prosecutor in this case. So we don't know why this deal was offered. Holly was not the only person arrested, by the way, for this shooting. In addition to Holly, there was another adult. There were three juveniles who were all arrested. And they've all pled guilty, actually, to the same offenses, according to the Advocate. I don't know if they were offered the same deal. Because, again, they didn't plead no contest. They pled guilty. So, I just have questions. Why did Trey Holly get offered this deal? Was the prosecution concerned that its case would fall apart if Holly went to trial? Or really was this, again, another example of justice not being blind, but lifting up her blindfold and peeking a little bit to see if the defendant, you know, might help Southern University have a really good season. On to today's armed citizen story. From Illinois, where a case did go to trial, and a judge in Quincy, Illinois, sided with the man who fired shots, ruling that he did, in fact, act in self-defense. So KHQA, reporting on the case here, the Quincy man was found guilty on charges of aggravated possession of a firearm. But he was found not guilty on two counts of discharging a firearm and one count of intent to kill or injure. This incident happened back on July 6, 2024. Alan Christopher Pacheco, who goes by Chris, and his girlfriend, Deja Hankins, were shopping at a TJ Maxx in Quincy. His girlfriend said that she saw this guy or felt this guy named Islam Woodson, who was staring at her. Pacheco says he walked up to Woodson hoping for a neutral confrontation. Just, dude, what are you doing? Shortly thereafter, Islam Woodson's cousin, Terrence Horton, walked over to the pair, allegedly threatened Pacheco, and hinted that he had a gun in his bag, saying, "You don't want to F with me." So apparently, at that point, Pacheco broke off contact with the two guys. He and his girlfriend continued shopping at the TJ Maxx. They walk outside. They get in their car, roll down the windows, because it's July, it's hot, right? And then as they're getting ready to back up, they see that there's a car parked behind them, blocking their way out. Prosecutors said that Pacheco could have driven forward because there was no car in the parking spot in front of him. Pacheco said he couldn't back out because of the vehicle blocking the way. He said that Horton and Woodson both then walked up to the driver's side window, made threats to Pacheco, saying, "Do you want to fight?" before they allegedly started assaulting him while he was in his vehicle. Pacheco said he was in fear for his life. He pulled his gun, fired two shots at Horton. Woodson then ran towards another shop there in the strip mall complex. According to prosecutors, Pacheco followed him and then fired two shots in Woodson's direction but missed. Pacheco's defense attorney said that he and his girlfriend then talked in their vehicle processing what had just happened. They left. They drove around the block. They then went back to TJ Maxx where Pacheco turned himself in, telling the EMTs that there was a shooter and I'm here to turn myself in. So Pacheco charged with two counts of aggravated discharge of a firearm, one count of aggravated unlawful possession of a weapon, one count of aggravated battery, one count of first-degree murder was dismissed during the trial. And the judge in this case, again, found that Pacheco acted in self-defense, which does kind of surprise me based on the prosecution's allegation that he got out of his car, ended up firing at Islam Woodson as Woodson was running away. But the judge heard all the evidence and I didn't. I'm just going based on a couple of news stories. So I assume the judge had more information than I do. But again, he did find Pacheco guilty of a class 4 felony for aggravated unlawful possession of a weapon. Basically possessing a firearm without a concealed carry license, maybe even without a FOID card. But this is a possessory offense. That is, again, a felony in Illinois. Perfectly legal in more than half the country to possess a firearm without a license. So long as you can legally own it, you can legally have it in your home, you can legally carry it, right? Not in Illinois. So even though Mr. Pacheco acted in self-defense, because he did so with a gun that the state had not given him permission to own or carry, he could still be going to prison. We'll keep our eyes open. Sentencing set for June 17th, and hopefully we'll be able to bring you an update not long afterwards. Finally today, our good deed of the day, in the right place, at the right time, willing able to do the right thing. A good Samaritan who helped a stranger fill up his car with gas and was repaid with child pornography. Yeah, I gotta tell you, this is a very bizarre story. The Good Samaritan stepping up once again, however, to alert authorities to what happened. This is out of San Antonio. A guy named Gerardo Hernandez, he's 30 years old. He is now accused of sending child porn to a man who had helped him put gas in his car. According to the Bexar County Sheriff's Office, the two exchanged numbers. Hernandez said, "You know, I'll pay you back, basically. Give me your number." And then for some reason, instead of, you know, Venmoing him $20 or whatever, he sent the dude child porn. Bexar County Sheriff Javier Salazar says the Good Samaritan immediately called authorities after receiving the child porn in another act of being in the right place at the right time and willing and able to do the right thing. So far, the Sheriff's Department has identified three victims, two of them minors. One of them is now an adult, but is believed to have been a teenager when the video is recorded. Sheriff Salazar says he believes that there are other victims. He said, from what we've been able to understand at this point, it appears that Hernandez's way of doing things is that he actively seeks out living situations where he has access to kids. Because we believe that's what occurred with these instances here. There's no relation here. These are people he was able to take advantage of. Hernandez worked as a maintenance worker at an apartment complex before he was arrested. Again, the Sheriff's Department says this is an active investigation, and it may not have been uncovered at all were it not for, A, Hernandez's idiotic decision to share child porn with the guy who tried to help him fill up his car with gas, but also with the actions of that Good Samaritan, again, alerting law enforcement, not because he didn't get his $20 or whatever, but because he was so disturbed by what he saw that he wanted those victims to get justice. So in the right place, at the right time, willing able to do the right thing more than once, and hopefully sparing other children from being exploited and perhaps sexually assaulted in the future. We thank that anonymous Good Samaritan there in San Antonio, Texas. And that is going to do it for this edition of Bearing Arms, Cam & Company. I want to thank you for being a part of the program as well. Again, we're going to be covering everything going on in Washington, D.C. today, so be sure to check out BearingArms.com this afternoon. We'll be back tomorrow with another edition of Bearing Arms, Cam & Company. But until then, yes, we've got you covered at Bearing Arms with all of the latest Second Amendment news and information from all across the nation that you need to know about. And if you like what you see, we'd also encourage you to become a VIP, VIP Gold or VIP Platinum member. Use the promo code FIGHT when you go to BearingArms.com/subscribe, and you can get 60% off your membership. You'll get some great benefits no matter what tier of support you choose, and no matter what tier you choose, you'll be supporting the independent pro-Second Amendment journalism that we're doing at Bearing Arms, and I want to thank you for that very much. Have a great rest of your Hump Day Wednesday. We'll see you back here tomorrow. Until then, be well, be safe, and be free.